is the NPR News Update. It's Minnesota's news on your schedule. Coming up, the way Minnesota estimates the cost of legislation could change under a bill introduced in the Minnesota House and Senate. Spend that big $1.9 billion budget surplus, one lawmaker says not so fast. And the Mayo Clinic is opening facilities catering to patients from China. It's Tuesday, March 3rd. I'm John Wanamaker. Legislation introduced in the Minnesota House and Senate would create a new nonpartisan state government office to analyze financial matters. Tim Pugmire reports.
The proposed legislative budget office would work with state departments to estimate the cost of lawmakers' bills. It would replace the role currently performed by Minnesota Management and Budget. Republican House Speaker Kurt Dowd and DFL Senate Majority Leader Tom Bach are sponsoring the measure. Dowd said the legislature should take care of its own fiscal work and not depend on the executive branch.
We shouldn't have to rely on them for numbers on our bills. And, you know, I'm not even suggesting there has been adjustment of those numbers on bills they don't like, but it's, you know, the potential exists.
DFL House Minority Leader Paul Thiessen said he thinks the current system works well and he's concerned the lawmakers would end up arguing over competing sets of numbers. Tim Pugmire, Minnesota Public Radio News at the Capitol.
DFL Senate Majority Leader Tom Bach says he wants to hold back part of the nearly $1.9 billion budget surplus just in case the state loses a big tax lawsuit. Bach says he's concerned about the lawsuit filed by Kimberly-Clark Corporation against the state over tax calculations. He said it could end up costing Minnesota $700 million. A court ruling could come later this year, and Bach said it would be wise to stash part of the surplus away until the case is resolved. He said if the state wins, lawmakers can decide what to do with the money next year.
We're going to have a session next year. We can come back without that cloud hanging over us and take a look at, you know, we'll be one more year closer to the end of the biennium. We'll take a look at some changes then.
Bach says putting the whole $700 million aside would be difficult. He did not specify the amount he would like to save. The Minnesota Department of Transportation is putting price tags on projects that would get funded if Governor Dayton's transportation plan becomes law. Dayton is proposing to raise gas taxes to help pay for $6 billion in new road and bridge construction. MnDOT officials say the total cost ranges from $4.1 to $7.8 billion. MnDOT statewide planning manager Mark Nelson says he's confident all of the projects will get funded if Dayton's plan is approved by the legislature.
There's no 100% guarantee, but you know, based on our professional experience and looking back 10 years and sort of all the different variables we've dealt with in the past, we're confident in this list.
The most expensive item on this list, a renovation of I-94 between Minneapolis and St. Paul, and that could top out at $722 million. Republicans say they oppose a gas tax hike and don't think Dayton should tie specific projects to the increase. House Republicans' top education bill is ready again for a floor vote after lawmakers learned more about its financial impact. Republican leaders delayed a scheduled vote last week when they received an 11th-hour fiscal note that showed an unexpected two-year cost of $895,000. The bill requires local layoff policies that consider teacher performance over seniority. But during a House Ways and Means Committee hearing, DFL Representative Deborah Hillstrom of Brooklyn Center said the bill raises questions about the process of those staffing decisions.
I want to make sure that teachers are not going to be placed in a situation where they can't confirm or deny whether or not they're being treated unfairly as they're being laid off. This really is a layoff bill, and I envision that the data practices challenges in this bill will result in lawsuits.
Republican Representative Jennifer Loon of Eden Prairie insisted that her bill protects teacher rights and the privacy of their employment data. The House could vote on the bill Thursday. Duluth Mayor Don Ness looked ahead at what he called a bright future in his final State of the City address last night. Ness has helped Duluth dig out from fiscal deficits and a massive unfunded retiree health care liability. He's also focused on the quality of life amenities like trails and pitched Duluth as a Midwest version of towns like Boulder, Colorado, or Burlington, Vermont. Ness says Duluth is closer to fulfilling its potential.
We have proven our ability to solve massive problems, and we have now begun to use that same energy and passion for our community to grow a more prosperous city for us all.
The popular two-term mayor announced last October he would not seek another 4 years. This is the NPR News Update. We come your way every day around noon. It's Minnesota's news on your schedule. Boston Scientific is acquiring Minnetonka-based American Medical Systems' men's and prostate health business for about $1.65 billion. Martin Moylan has more on that.
American Medical Systems provides treatments for enlarged prostates and other male medical maladies. Boston Scientific CEO Mike Mahoney told analysts that AMS fits well with Boston Scientific's urology business.
We are creating a nearly $1 billion global market leader with market-leading positions across the five major segments, including stone management, erectile restoration, BPH treatment, male urinary incontinence, and pelvic floor repair.
The deal does not include AMS's women's health business. The AMS business that Boston Scientific is buying has about 275 Minnesota employees. This is the first big deal for Massachusetts-based Boston Scientific since it bought Twin Cities-based Guidant for $27 billion in 2006. Martin Moylan, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Minnesota's system of state-run colleges is looking into accusations that two of its campus presidents plagiarized their doctoral dissertations. Alex Friedrich has the story.
A former South Central College adjunct instructor says the president of that college, Annette Parker, plagiarized others' work while studying at Western Kentucky University. The instructor also accused Dorothy Duran, the president of Minnesota State College Southeast Technical, of plagiarizing parts of her dissertation at the University of Texas at Austin. System leaders have asked the universities in Kentucky and Texas to review the dissertations. Trustee Phil Kreinke says accusations of academic dishonesty are a huge concern.
If they prove to have any credence or any credibility, you can be certain that we will act.
Spokespersons for both presidents have denied the accusations. Alex Friedrich, Minnesota Public Radio News.
An airport panel has selected the Graves Hotel Company to build new lodging at Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport. Graves would like to open its latest hotel in time for the Super Bowl in 2018 if the full airports commission agrees. Tim Nelson has more on that.
Hotel entrepreneur Jim Graves is best known for founding the budget American chain and for building the luxury Graves 601 Hotel in downtown Minneapolis. His company also manages hotels in St. Paul and restaurants in the region. Today, Graves Hospitality got at least a preliminary nod to build a new hotel at the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport. A Metropolitan Airports Commission committee chose Graves from among three bidders, including Mortenson Construction and Morrissey Hospitality Companies. The airport asked for bids for a hotel with about 250 rooms. Graves said the new building will offer a unique experience to travelers with an indoor connection to the airport.
Well, it's really important to have a seamless experience for a guest that comes to the airport, can, especially if they're obviously doing carry-on, can immediately go on to one of the concourses and directly access the hotel without having to provide any on-premise kind of transportation or what have you.
Graves said plans call for a luxury boutique hotel with a distinct identity, but he didn't offer much more detail, such as the exact number of guest rooms or the meeting facilities it might offer. He said his company was in talks with an unnamed chain to brand the new hotel. He also said the hotel itself would be outside airport security so that it could host non-ticketed guests.
It's going to be a great asset, I think, to not only the community, but hopefully to the airport and the entire traveling community. So we're going to implement some amenities that work well both locally and also with those people that are just in transit and what have you, just moving from point A to point B.
The plan calls for the hotel to be built southeast of the huge parking ramps in front of the airport's main terminal. It would be on land where the old Northwest Airlines Building B once stood. Initial plans would have a skyway leading to a separate security gate at Concourse C and parking in an existing ramp that's not fully used by the airport post office. Metropolitan Airports Commission Chairman Dan Boven said the commission has been dubious about a hotel before.
A lot of the other airports around the country, if you dig down in the details, the airport hotels are not very profitable, don't really work out, have to be subsidized by the airport net, and we were just not interested in doing that for the longest time. But we know it's an amenity, whether it's a weather issue or whether it's somebody coming in here and having meetings.
Boven said leasing out the land instead of building a hotel would help shift that financial risk to a developer and away from flyers that don't use the hotel. The full airport commission is expected to approve Graves' selection on March 17th. The deal would also require approval from the FAA and a long-term ground lease for the real estate under the hotel. Tim Nelson, Minnesota Public Radio News, at the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport.
A former University of Minnesota football player has been sentenced for his role in a fight outside a Mankato bar that left another man with life-threatening brain injury. Philip Nelson was sentenced to 100 hours of community service, among other conditions, after pleading guilty to one count of fifth-degree assault. That's a misdemeanor. The victim, Isaac Kolstad, was in a coma for a time after the fight with Nelson and another man. Prosecutors say two medical experts concluded that a kick from Nelson did not cause the majority of Kolstad's injuries. Kolstad's attorney Kenneth White says the family wanted a tougher sentence.
They were extremely disappointed. This was just one more step in the disappointment process for them in terms of the criminal case as it has been handled thus far.
White is exploring a possible civil case against one or both of the men involved in the fight that injured Kolstad. A push has begun to make it easier to object to autopsies on religious grounds. The effort comes after car accidents last month that killed members of the Mille Lacs and Fond du Lac Ojibwe bands. In both cases, families needed an emergency court order to prevent autopsies that they argued would violate their cultural and religious beliefs. Dan Crocker has more.
On the night of February 6th, Mushkoub Abid veered off a northern Minnesota highway and struck a utility pole. When the 65-year-old Ojibwe spiritual leader died the next day, Mille Lacs Band Chief Executive Melanie Benjamin says his family wanted to take his body home.
Based on the religious beliefs of the family, they did not want an autopsy.
Abid's family practices a traditional Ojibwe religion known as Medeowin. Few Ojibwe still practice it, and a lot of people have never heard of it. Benjamin says when a follower dies, there's a strict ritual over a four-day period.
There's some ceremonial washing and dressing. And because of his religion, they didn't want the body to be cut in any way.
To do so is considered desecration. But Carlton County Medical Examiner Dr. Thomas Ancini scheduled an autopsy anyway. Ancini declined an interview request, but as St. Louis County Attorney Mark Rubin explains, Minnesota law gives medical examiners sole discretion to decide whether to conduct an autopsy when a death is not naturally caused.
There's a public interest to determine the cause and the manner of death. I've tried many homicide cases, and that's what you have to prove to a jury. What was the cause of death? What was the manner of death? If you don't have a forensic pathologist to do that, to explain that for you, you can't prove the case.
Autopsies can also be important in civil lawsuits, and there are public health benefits to conducting them. For example, tracking contagious diseases. And they contribute to mortality statistics used in medical research. But Mushkoub Abid's family argues there was no public interest in doing an autopsy. It was a single car accident, and he had a history of heart disease. Eventually, the family got an emergency order from a Carlton County judge to have the body returned without an autopsy. Tad Johnson, a University of Minnesota Duluth professor and attorney for the Mille Lacs Band, says they were fortunate.
We had a judge that lived near an Indian reservation and understood these beliefs.
Johnson says the tribe is drafting legislation to try to give families a legal process to object to an autopsy.
We're hoping that if the law is changed, that they would be provided with the opportunity to lodge a formal objection and, you know, possibly get a hearing in front of a judge within a brief period of time on that matter.
Six other states currently allow for religious objections to autopsies, including New York and California. The ban says its proposal will not interfere with necessary autopsies, such as the death of a child or someone killed by a contagious disease. But what the ban sees as common sense strikes others as problematic.
If we were to say, look, you can't autopsy an individual with a particular religious belief, we are setting ourselves up on a very, very slippery slope.
That's Michael Sharkey, a Minneapolis attorney who specializes in mortuary law. He's also a licensed funeral director. Sharkey says other religious traditions, including Judaism and Islam, also historically have objected to autopsies. But he says people of those faiths have largely come to accept a larger public benefit to conducting them.
Nobody wants to have their loved one autopsied. But we accept as a society that this is just a kind of a necessary evil, that there's going to be a cutting on the deceased, but that cutting is excusable because we can learn something from it, or we can possibly address a potential crime.
Tribal leaders, county attorneys, and others involved in the dispute over Mashkub Abid's body all agree that better communication and more compassion were needed. The Mille Lacs Band argues a change in law is nevertheless needed for those times when their members' religion is not respected. They hope to have their bill introduced in the legislature in the next couple weeks. Dan Crocker, Minnesota Public Radio News, Duluth.
Mayo Clinic wants to use the rapidly growing medical tourism market to draw more Chinese patients to Rochester for treatment. The clinic is collaborating on a new concierge service as well as a joint venture with a Chinese investment firm, Elizabeth Baer reports.
On the second floor of downtown Rochester's newest building, the H3 Plaza, baseboard trim goes in on office space. In a couple of months, the space will house the offices of Medicine, a Chinese company setting up a door-to-door concierge service for Chinese patients traveling more than 6,000 miles for treatment at Mayo.
So you're standing right about where there is a wall with a fireplace on it?
Brian Moser is the director of construction and development for Rochester's Titan Development and Investments. Medicine is leasing space from the Rochester company and spending about $1 million to build out what will be the city's first international concierge service.
I know that we feel it's a score to have them in the building. You know, it's a positive for us. So if somebody's here either meeting or at Mayo, they can come over here and relax and they don't have to go sit in the hotel room.
Medicine's senior vice president, Jason Zung, says clients will be primarily from mainland China, and the company will coordinate everything from booking airfare and ground transportation to hotel accommodations through offices in Hong Kong and Rochester. Zung declined to say how much clients will spend on the service.
So from the time they start, you know, thinking about going to Mayo, we'll help them get registration. We'll also help them to get visa, all those documents necessary to travel.
Zung says most Chinese patients coming to Mayo now are those with complex conditions, as well as an increasing number of executives tapping Mayo's executive care program. He says for now, Medicine is working exclusively with Mayo, and he expects to hire 5 to 6 employees in Rochester in the next year.
Because of our decision to work exclusively with Mayo, we really know the system very well, and Mayo is, of course, very willing to help us to know that system well, too, so that when we tell patients what to expect, it's really what they are going to get.
Offering international patients a more culturally sensitive visit, both at Mayo and in Rochester, is a priority for the clinic. Dr. David Hayes directs the Mayo Clinic Care Network and says the clinic's biggest growth right now is coming from China. But until now, the clinic hasn't developed the infrastructure it needs for Chinese patients.
Now, we've done that for our Middle Eastern patients and our Spanish-speaking patients, and both the Mayo Clinic has all of the necessary infrastructure, as does the community, really. They offer a number of things that would be culturally sensitive to those international patients.
Things like translating educational material into Mandarin or having enough interpreters for non-English-speaking Chinese patients. The clinic averages about 300 Chinese patients a year, up mostly in the last couple years. Mayo officials declined to give comparable numbers for patients from the Middle East or Latin America, but Hayes anticipates Chinese patient numbers will increase in much the same way as Middle Eastern patients.
As we look down the road, I would see that this population of patients developing to be similar or greater than what we're currently seeing from the Middle East.
Mayo has also signed on to a joint venture that provides services to some private hospitals in Beijing and Shanghai. The numbers are all still small. The clinic's international patients account for just about 2% of its more than 1 million patients each year. But Hayes and others are looking to deepen the ties between the clinic and China as future demand increases. Elizabeth Baer, Minnesota Public Radio News, Rochester.
And finally, ever dreamed of what it would be like to win a Nobel Prize? A new exhibition at the American-Swedish Institute in Minneapolis brings together the glamour of the Nobel Awards dinner, along with fashion, music, and floral displays inspired by the 2013 Nobel Prize winners. Marianne Combs reports.
Nobel Creations is that rare show that appeals to both fashionistas and physicists. On loan from the Nobel Museum in Stockholm, it features couture designs from students of Sweden's Beckmans College of Design. But the dresses do more than impress. They also depict major scientific work. American-Swedish Institute's Krista Ullman points to a glittery black gown that was made in honor of the discovery of the Higgs boson particle.
We have this billowing gray sort of canopy around the dress that represents the Higgs field. And then when the dress, which is made up of these black stone-like particles, when it intersects with this canopy, when it touches it, big points are highlighted with pyrite. That's when the particles are acquiring mass.
Ullman says each year, Beckman students are charged to design dresses that represent the six Nobel Prizes. The young designers know that eventually the prize winners will see the outfits when they journey to Stockholm to receive their awards.
The very first thing they do is visit the Nobel Museum. They get tours with the curators, and they see this exhibition on display. So the students are there to talk about their work, and the laureates get to see all of their incredible ideas interpreted in fashion and music. It's the first thing that they do when they arrive in Stockholm.
Wandering through the rooms of the American-Swedish Institute, visitors hear original compositions by students of the Royal College of Music in Stockholm. Guto Lucena composed this piece to represent the wild fluctuations of the stock market. In 2013, three economists were awarded Nobel Prizes for advancing common understanding of market trends. While the Nobel Prize is based primarily in Stockholm, communications manager Laura Cederberg says it's fitting this exhibition should come to Minnesota, and not just because it's at the American-Swedish Institute.
We have the Nobel Peace Prize Forum here every year at Gustavus. They have a Nobel Forum in the fall. And we have one of the states with the largest number of laureates here. And there's people here at the University of Minnesota and all of our great universities that are continuing to work on these, you know, major projects and accomplishments.
Among Minnesota's laureates is Johns Hopkins professor Peter Agre, who was born in Northfield. He won the Nobel Prize in Chemistry in 2003 for the discovery of water channels in cell membranes. Agre has loaned his Nobel diploma and a replica of his medal to the Institute for the exhibition. In addition to the dresses and music, the American-Swedish Institute is also displaying floral designs created by Twin Cities florists. In one room, an antique writing desk is the setting for an explosion of greenery and paper. It's a tribute to the writing process of Alice Munro, who won the 2013 Prize for Literature. Krista Ullman says ultimately, the entire exhibition is a celebration of creativity.
If you are a fashion designer or a musician or a floral arranger, you have to have creativity. Same if you are a physicist or a writer or a chemist. You have this incredible creativity to challenge established norms and really question everything and try to create something new in your work.
Nobel Creations, inspired by the Nobel Prize, is on display at the American-Swedish Institute through May 24th. The annual Nobel Peace Prize Forum, hosted by Augsburg College in Minneapolis, takes place this weekend. Marianne Combs, Minnesota Public Radio News, Minneapolis.
And that's the NPR News Update for Tuesday, March 3rd. I'm John Wanamaker. Thanks for listening.